Welcome to this edition of Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. Happy Monday to you and yours. Hope you had an excellent weekend. Lots to discuss over the next few minutes here on the Monday edition of the podcast. So appreciate you downloading it as always. And you know, if you can, when you download, tell friends, tell family, loved ones, hated ones, people that aren't your friends. If you just want to help the podcast out, it would be great to share the word, share that you like it, share what you think. If you know Grizzly fans that would be interested, it would be awesome because, again, helping to grow the podcast is just really, really good stuff. And I would appreciate it if you can do it. That'd be great. Ratings, all that stuff would really help out. So appreciate that because we're trying to continue to bring you these podcasts for free and do all we can to help with that. So please, if that's something you can do, that would be really awesome, and I appreciate it a whole lot. We're going to talk today on the podcast about good news and bad news for the Grizzlies. There was some good news. There was some bad news over the weekend. So we'll start with the good news. The good news is that things seem to be progressing nicely with regard to returning players. And you saw in the loss against the Rockets that Ben McLemore was back and played decent minutes. Wayne Seldon also back, didn't really figure much except in garbage time, but he was back and on the court. Excellent news there because that at least allows you to start to see what this rotation is going to look like when everybody is healthy. And, you know, those guys are still... I don't necessarily classify them as fully healthy because they're kind of working their way back into shape. They're not anywhere close to where you want them to be in the regular season, but they're getting there. Maybe another week or so, and you'll see McLemore closer to where he needs to be. It's hard to get up to speed, new team, new system, new teammates, all that stuff. It's hard to get acclimated so quickly and on the fly, even though McLemore has been more or less, I'd say close to full health for the last couple weeks, and he's been pretty active in practice, and you know he looks physically, he looks the part. You're still not in game shape. You're still not in game mode with communication, and you could see it in the game where he missed some assignments. He blew some switches. He didn't communicate, the way that you need to. That kind of stuff, it's going to come with time, and that's all that it's going to come with. You can't force it. You can't rush it. And just him being on the court with the guys, with his teammates in those lineups, all that stuff will help, and it'll come. But it's nice to see him back, and once you start to factor him into the equation, you know, then you can put together your rotations. And I'll say this too, same thing with Seldon. I talked about it last week with Seldon and Dylan Brooks. You know, I don't think it's not like it's Wayne Seldon's birthright to jump in and be able to be the starting shooting guard for this team. And it's not Ben McLemore's birthright either. It's you know, Dylan Brooks has done an excellent job when those guys have not been around. So you can't just jump in there and assume that that's the case. McLemore is going to get that opportunity because of his contract and because of the expectations they have. His ceiling, his perceived ceiling, even is higher. But it's not a birthright. It's not something that he necessarily is going to be better at. I mean, historically, with McLemore, he's not a particularly aware defender. Generally speaking, he's not the highest basketball IQ player. At least he hasn't demonstrated a tremendous amount in his career. That's something that the Grizzlies, you know, are banking on having been a result of his time with Sacramento and with all of the uncertainty there. Different coaches, front office problems, Boogie Cousins situation, all those things that were problematic and contributing to a sense of unease and a lack of stability, that being a factor. I think the Grizzlies are really kind of putting a lot on the fact that that was a real contributing factor to McLemore's inattentive defense, or maybe not applying himself as strongly as he could. The hope is that you get that stuff out of the way and he's going to be able to be a much more credible performer on that end, that he's going to be much more focused and he can get it. That's a theory. I could, to some extent, understand it, but at least in the first game, you saw some of the stuff that you know, we've seen from McLemore before, you know, just not quite being up to speed. Give him a couple weeks and then reassess. And if you're seeing the same stuff, then it's probably a McLemore thing. Right now, it could just be an injury thing or an adjustment thing. So wait and see. No need to make any kind of full assessment. Seldon, the fact that he comes in with garbage time tells you again that you know Dylan Brooks is probably gonna still have the edge on him, and he's gonna have to work his way through. And I think that's the way that it should be. Brooks has done enough, and again he had his moments in the Houston game. You know, he had that sequence, and I put video up on Twitter if you want to see it, where he played tremendous individual defense on James Harden, then starts a break, makes a really nice pass after he, you know, dribbles down in transition and gets the ball deep where it needs to be, and then gets an offensive rebound off of a Conley miss, and, you know, immediately makes another good play. He's just making a lot of good plays, and, you know, the issue for him is fouls right now. You know, he fouls too much, little turnover prone, but that's to be expected from a rookie. But overall, he still does stuff that, and a lot of stuff that you just wouldn't, you know, you don't see a lot from rookies, particularly second round picks that have to do what he does. He just has a really good awareness. He's a player that the more you scrutinize his game, the more you're going to like what you see. He is not one that shows up fully in just a statistical profile. You got to dig in a little bit with Dylan Brooks, and when you do, chances are you're going to like what you see. The game itself on Saturday night, not so great. Houston pretty much controlled this thing from the very beginning. The tone was set when Houston hit its first three threes. From most of them from, you know, way out. We're talking 25, 26, 28 footers. They hit those very quickly, and it's 9-0. Grizzlies take an early timeout, and there you go. You're thinking it's not going to be a good night, and guess what? It was not a good night if you're a Grizzly fan. The Grizzlies never led, never really looked like they were going to lead, never got it down to even a one-possession game. Got it down to 5. That was about the lowest that it was for the bulk of the game. And then the Rockets would zoom away, and that would be that. James Harden finishing with 38 points, 4 rebounds, 8 assists, and was outstanding. No matter what the Grizzlies threw at him, he had an answer for everything. Eric Gordon, as I mentioned earlier, was just sensational. As a scorer, didn't do much else, didn't have to do much else. He was firing it up from anywhere and everywhere and putting it in. 6 three-pointers for him, 26 points. And just tough night, and the kind of thing that the Rockets are capable of doing. It's disappointing because the Grizzlies have had the answer for the Rockets in each of the first two ball games, but this was not as crisp a Grizzly performance. Certainly on the defensive end, it wasn't. And you saw some of the, you know, as I've been saying kind of on the pod, that there are just a few little seams starting to show in the Grizzlies. You're seeing the fraying of some edges. You're seeing that guys, you know, when you're having to kind of force the issue with guys like Jarrell Martin playing a lot of minutes, it still is going to cost you. You're seeing Mario Chalmers not really perform up to snuff, and that's causing problems. Mike Conley, who we're going to get to, is a huge problem in this ball game. So those things that have been some issues and sporadic play and all that stuff, comes to get you in a game like this. And Grizzlies never really looked like competing against the Rockets. Those are the kinds of games that are just so disappointing, because I know Grizzly fans are well aware. You've seen those games before where it's just like, come on, man. You're not even there. It just doesn't ever look like they're gonna be in it. You kind of know how it's gonna go. You know how this thing's gonna finish, and sure enough, that's exactly what happened. I don't think it's too much of a cause for concern, at least overall. But there are some concerning things that are kind of peeking their little heads up over the surface within what we're seeing in these games. And first and foremost is the aforementioned Mike Conley, who, you know, we talk about the difference in the numbers between Dylan Brooks' numbers and the eye test. Sometimes they complement each other, sometimes they don't. Sometimes you have to really dig in to figure out what's going on. And in the case of Mike Conley, that's one of the things, because, you know, the numbers are not horrendous with Mike Conley. There are definitely some concerning things, but the numbers themselves are not overall, like, you wouldn't look at it and say, oh my God, this guy's having a horrible year. Wouldn't necessarily jump out at you quite like that. And yet, when you watch Conley, apart from a few quarters here and there, a couple games, you know, apart from those rather fleeting times, for the most part, when you watch Mike Conley, it's not been the same guy. I feel like, at least I hope, and I feel rough saying this, but I hope that you're still dealing with some residual Achilles soreness here, because otherwise he's looking like a diminished version of himself. So I hope it's a injury related thing. I don't mean that from Mike's discomfort or anything. I just mean, you want to think that what you're seeing is a result of a guy who's hurt and unable to go, rather than a guy who has dropped off a little bit, or a guy whose role has changed a little bit and is not performing as well, or a guy who teams have caught on to or anything like that. I think, you know, Mike's had a kind of a general slow rise in his career and the way he's played. And that has sort of stopped this year, at least as of this point. Now part of it is that Mike is playing more and more off the ball. And, you know, he's playing probably the majority, I would say, of his minutes, except in the absolute crunch time moments. He's playing the majority of his minutes off the ball. He's become a bit of a two, and there are some positives to that. It allows him to be a catch and shoot player, which he can do. It allows him to catch the ball on the move and drive the basket, which helps, again, with his skills in what he can do. And there's still, if you look over, like, at, you know, his synergy numbers, things like that, you know, he's doing okay. He's still an excellent spot up performer according to synergy. He's at 1.3 points per possession, which is excellent, shooting 52% in those situations. He's still a very good pick and roll player and ball handler in the pick and roll. That's obviously going to be something that he's going to thrive on and should thrive on, with that. He's shooting 44, a little over 44% in those situations, which, again, you know, for him is good. So it's like, you know, it's hard to necessarily just jump out and look and say, okay, this is, you know, you got some real problems here. Now, you know, that being said, like, his pick and roll numbers are down a little bit from last year. If you go back and look at what he did in the pick and roll last year, he was 46.4% shooting of his own offense, was over 1 point per possession which this year he is not. He is, well, I take that back. He's right at 1 point per possession, which is still pretty good for him. He was slightly better last year, but it's not overwhelming. Like I said, this is kind of where the eye test and the numbers differ a little bit. You know, when it comes to that, I mean, part of it is also the amount of time he's spending doing this stuff, because you know, he's become more of a, I don't know if I would say a catch and shoot guy or anything like that, but you know, he's not quite as much of a pick and roll guy as he was last year. He's more, a little more often you're seeing him, you know, in some other roles. You know, that number has dropped about 4%. So not a huge drop off, but that's enough to make a little bit of a difference in the profiles of the shots that he's getting, and the way that he's getting his shots too. That's the other aspect of it. Now, if you look at the pure numbers from Mike, shooting under 40% now, 39.7% from the field. That is by far his worst. That would represent his worst year. And, you know, we're still very early, so I would expect that that's going to get better. But he's shooting 40%, or just under 40%. Same thing from three, where he is definitely, this is his lowest three-point shooting year of his career. Thus far, 31.4% from three on a career high, 6.4 attempts. So taking more threes, but making a smaller percentage, I should say, of them. You know, he's getting to the foul line at a career high level, which is good, and that's helping to make up for some of the issues there. You know, he's taking almost six free throws a game and making almost five. His free throw percentage is down from last year and the year before that, but not hugely. He's still shooting over 80%. His assists are down. His assists are the lowest they've been since his second year in the league at 4.3. But that, again, goes back to my point earlier about his role. His role has changed. He's not really a point guard in the traditional sense, in the way that he's being used right now for the team. And I don't know that that is something that he's necessarily embracing, or I mean, I think he's embracing it just fine, I guess, but he's not thriving in that situation. And if you look at the offensive and defensive ratings, it's kind of similar sort of situation with him, where the numbers do not pop out to you as overwhelmingly bad or anything of that nature, but they are not great, particularly when compared with years past. He's got his best defensive rating, so that's good, because he's kind of catching, you know, along with some of the lineups that he's playing with, the Grizzlies are defending at a very high level. There are portions of games, not so much against the Rockets the other night, but there are portions of games this year where they have really locked down opponents, and Mike has been part of that, and he's done okay in that regard. His defensive rating is just over 101, which is what you want. 101.5. That's very, very solid as a defensive rating. But his offensive rating is 103.4. These are points per 100 possessions, by the way. That's what you're talking about. And you know, that is a big drop off from last year. Big drop off from last year when he was at 108.6. And even a drop off from, you know, all the years past. This is his lowest offensive rating since his second year in the league, when he really struggled. And net rating is also down from last year. And, you know, you go and look at the profile, and it kind of tells you his assist percentage is the lowest that it's been in a long time, just 25% of field goals assisted while he is on the floor. And, you know, by the same token, he's playing fewer minutes per game than at any time since his second year, because of, you know, part because of fouls, in part because of the way he's being used, in part because probably his health, he's not probably not 100%. And yet when he's out there and he's shooting a career low in field goal percentage, his usage rate is the highest that it's been in his career. He's also playing at a higher pace than he's ever played at in his career, even though it may not look very much like that's the case when you use the old eye test. They are, in terms of possessions, playing faster than they've ever played, and he's playing faster than he's ever played. So you have the highest usage, you have the lowest assist percentage, you have your lowest shooting percentage. All of this points to probably too much offensive load being expected and being shouldered by Mike Conley. We may be reaching the edge of what you can expect to get from Mike as a, you know, big usage guy, over 25% usage guy. And it may be that he's going to have to be dialed back a little bit. You know, also you saw like in against Houston, to me, you know, just from a visual standpoint, taking a step back from the numbers, he doesn't have that explosive burst that you would think that he would have. He doesn't seem to have that extra little gear when going to the basket. There have been a couple times when, you know, he just can't quite finish. Capella blocked a couple of his shots that I, you know, normally Mike would have found a way, in my memory at least, would have found a way to get those off the glass and get those in the basket. And against Capella, who is, I mean, he's playing great. He's a very tough shot blocker, very long arms. You know, no, nothing against that, because Capella can play for sure. But, you know, this Mike normally would find a way to make that work, and he didn't. That was a little bit of a concern. Also, the fact that he's missing a lot of good looks. A lot of good looks are not going down. You think they probably will. And, it, you know, you're only, you know, he's only played 11 games. So it's not as if, you know, he's like, you know, missed a ton of games, or it's not as if we've played, you know, halfway or more through the season. There's time for this stuff to turn around. But I bring you all this information because, you know, there's no question that with the Grizzlies, as well as they have done, and they have, you know, had some big wins already this year, still sitting at 7-5, still you look around the West and you know how deeply competitive it's going to be. And if the Grizzlies are going to make the playoffs and are going to finish with a reasonable, you know, mark win-wise to be able to make the playoffs, you know, 43, 45 or more, they've got to get more out of Mike. They got to figure out what's going on with Mike, and they got to get more out of Mike. And so, you know, trying to kind of put the pieces together of this puzzle and figure out why he looks like he does, I think there's certainly more to it. Keep an eye on, again, tomorrow night when the Grizzlies finish up the road trip against Milwaukee, Conley against Bledsoe. You know, now that the Bucks have Eric Bledsoe, it's never been a great matchup for Mike. Bledsoe with those really long arms, and he's, you know, pretty quick. Same thing with the Bucks, just in general, they have tremendous length across the board. That is the way that they defend. That's what they do. That has never been kind to Mike, and he's going to need to play. So keep an eye on that. The same is true also of, you know, Marc Gasol, who I was talking about Mike and his performance, but I think probably Mark was worse overall against Houston the other night. You know, Mark has played better this year. Mark has been better on a consistent level than Mike this year. He's been the absolute key guy in so many games, and has been more aggressive, has been more assertive, has looked pretty darn good for the most part this year. But against Houston the other night, it was not good. And it was, you know, a highlight again of some of the issues that you see from Mark. It's the lack of defense. You know, the defensive side of it is something it can go in and out with Mark. But the bench has done so much to help bail out Mark and Mike and the rest of the starters that you wonder also, you know, does Mark's lackluster performance have to do with playing with this poor starting group? Does Mike's lackluster performance have to do with that? The bench is lifted by everyone kind of working together and all playing well. Those guys, you know, Tyreek was spectacular, is a spectacular scorer this year, continues to be outstanding. You know, Chandler Parsons continues to be able to shoot and looks better. Didn't have the greatest game against Houston, but was solid. You continue to see good performances all the way around from those guys. And yet, you know, maybe that's contributing to the starters all kind of looking sort of iffy because they've just been with some bad groups. You know, Mark, he's got his lowest offensive rating in 5 years thus far, and he's got a pretty poor defensive rating by his standard compared to the rest of the team. At 103.5, you know, he's worse than the team number. And, you know, Mark is normally, you would expect that he would be a net positive in that role, but that has not been the case thus far this year. You know, he's got to play better. Yeah, he's got to play better, particularly on the defensive side. You know, I think that's the issue with Mark right now. You know, offensively, it will come. That I would not worry too much about. But, and it has come this year. But defensively, you know, he's got a lot on his shoulders. And, you know, perhaps when Jamichael Green returns and he's listed as doubtful for tomorrow night's game, I would say that he's not going to play. But the fact that he's listed as doubtful tells you that things are coming along nicely and that everything should be good to go, perhaps for him to return on Saturday against Houston. I don't think he'll be back in time for the Indiana game on Wednesday, but perhaps, you know, you'll see. It's a very interesting dynamic for the Grizzlies, and you know, Monday night's game in Milwaukee will tell a lot about where this team is and about where, you know, some of these guys, you know, where you go offensively, you know, what kind of adjustments you can start to make, you know, what you can see from your leaders. Your leaders have to step up and play a little bit better in order to win these sorts of games. Again, nothing earth-shattering. I don't think there's anything that's just majorly, you know, alarm bells are not going off in that sense. But yeah, there are some concerns going forward. And hopefully getting everyone back and getting a full rotation back will help, you know, kind of getting roles solidified. I think also, you know, getting some more quality back in the starting lineup. You want to preserve that bench group as a unit because they've been so good. But in doing so, you really are sacrificing a lot in that starting group. And I think it's telling with the numbers from Mike and Mark, James Ennis as well. You know, you're really starting to see the strain show. So getting quality back in that group, particularly Jamichael Green, I think would help immensely going forward and getting this team kind of stabilized and finding that group and then, you know, building on that for the future. I think that's a huge, huge thing that those guys have the opportunity to do. So we'll see tonight. A fascinating matchup with Milwaukee. As I mentioned, you know, this group with Eric Bledsoe is a whole different animal. They really are. And, you know, it's a dangerous, dangerous team. I don't know that they are the greatest matchup for the Grizzlies, but the redeeming thing. And then of course, I would be remiss if we didn't at least a little bit talk about the incredible, incredible play of Greek Freak. He is insane. How good his season has been, how much fun it is to watch him play, the kind of stuff that he can do. Every timeout, every box score you look at from Greek Freak is just like mind-blowing. Every single one. The guy is absurd in what he can do. And even on a bad night, he is still better than pretty much everybody else. And I would say at this point, he is the MVP leader. He's the best right now. He's certainly among the most fun guys to watch. You watch the guy go, and he just, the ability that he has to dribble, to maneuver in spaces that are not that big, and he just has a great body control. He has unbelievable length and stride, where he can take one dribble basically from half court and finish at the rim. He has picked up his shooting. He's picked up pretty much every aspect of his game to the point where, and he's insane in transition. One of the absolute best. He gets out, forget about it, shoots 73% in transition. Shoots 60% overall, basically. It's like it gets to the point where you just have to laugh, because what else can you do? The guy's shooting 59.4% from the field. I don't know what to tell you. It's not like he's some fringe guy. He's taking so many shots. It's going to be very tough. The matchup is going to be brutal. I don't know how, the best way for the Grizzlies to handle him. 32 points, 10 boards, 5 assists, 2 blocks, and a steal and a half, shooting 59.4%. He's 22 years old. So, yeah, I don't know. Good luck. That's all I can say. And enjoy watching him as much as you can as a Grizzly fan, knowing that he's doing stuff that's probably going to hurt your team. Like the other night against the Lakers when he has 33-15, or he's tremendous though. If you're a basketball fan, you have to love watching him play. That'll do it for this edition of Locked On Grizzlies. Again, thank you so much for being a part of it. As always, you can email me pedmiston@gmail.com. That's pedmiston, E-D-M-I-S-T-O-N. @gmail.com. You can reach me on Twitter. I'm @PeterEdmiston. Love to hear from you. Thank you for all of the feedback. Anything you can do, anything you want to ask, any of that stuff, just please feel free to do so. I would love to hear from you, and thank you for helping the podcast out. Have a great Monday. We'll talk to you post-game after the Bucks tomorrow night. You're Locked On Grizzlies.